Is Jacksonville ready for phase two of its reopening plan? Heads continue to roll at JEA, and storm season may be starting early again this year. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week on our Friday Media Roundtable, and you can join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, a look ahead to the new season of FSCJ's Artist Series as Broadway returns to town on stage. Plus, photographer Renee Parenteau, how she keeps making beautiful images even in the midst of this crisis. That's all ahead. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss yet another busy week in the news, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Writer Nikesha Williams is also with us. Nikesha, good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Jacksonville.
Good morning. And joining me in studio, our own WJCT reporter, Sky LeBron. Hi, Sky.
Morning, Melissa.
Lots to talk about this week. We'll get into it in just a minute. But first this hour, the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health reports more than 800 new COVID cases Thursday. That's a total of 43,210 cases. They also logged 48 more deaths around the state, for a total of 1,875. Now, here in Northeast Florida, we have 1,968 reported cases of the virus and 66 deaths. One of the new recorded deaths was a 65-year-old St. Johns County man, the other an 84-year-old Putnam County man. Meanwhile, some good news on the local coronavirus front. Through a partnership with the national nonprofit Community Solutions, Jacksonville has been chosen by Quest Diagnostics as one of only two cities in the nation, Phoenix is the other, where all homeless people are being tested for COVID. During the week of May 4th, the Sulzbacher Center partnered with UF Health Jax to administer tests at every local homeless service provider. They tested nearly 700 people. And guess what? Not one single positive case. So a bit of good news in this pandemic. As we continue to cover this, you might have been following that earlier this week, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry said he would let his work-from-home order for the city expire next week. He also says he believes Jacksonville is ready to gradually move into phase two of a reopening plan pending the governor's approval. Speaking of which, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says he will visit Jacksonville today to announce additional measures to reopen Florida's economy. What's expected? Well, more people could be seated in restaurants under the new phase. Gyms could reopen next week or soon thereafter. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look, and we want your calls. How do you feel the reopening of the state is going? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. We're expecting another visit from the governor today. He likes to come here to make these announcements. And what do we know about this phase two? What will this likely entail for all of us?
Well, as the mayor and the governor stated yesterday, that restaurants and retailers would, quote unquote, certainly expect to increase their capacity from the 25% restriction right now. The mayor didn't know when the city would open the 6 drive-through testing centers that it plans to operate. But existing locations, he said, have a lot of capacity. We just heard yesterday that Publix is going to expand their hours now. A little more, from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., and that's different, and that's an hour earlier for opening, an hour later, not going till 10 o'clock as they used to, and they will suspend the reserve shopping hours, which they had set aside for some of the older folks early. So things are changing. Did note that the mayor was wearing his blue mask yesterday as he was standing outside of the downtown library, where all the people are going to get their $1,000 relief payments.
Yeah, Nikesha, let's talk about that. The city has handed out more than $14 million in relief money for people that need help with mortgage, rent, and utility bills. This as unemployment claims skyrocket around the state and the country. People are still having a terrible time in Florida accessing unemployment benefits.
I think it's great that the city has stepped into the gap to fill a need where there clearly is one. We are living in unprecedented times with such a high rise in unemployment and people having to choose between paying rent, paying their light bills, and eating. So I think it's a great thing that the city has stepped in and to do it in such a public way at the library. I just would advise, as I've seen comments that, you know, people have their paperwork in order, and just be advised that even though things are opening up and you're going out and you may be able to do things and get benefits and get help, that you still need to be cautious and you still need to be safe, because what you don't want to do is bring your awareness down because you need help and then put yourself in an even worse situation because you may get sick.
And the mayor has mentioned that Jacksonville is restless to reopen and move on to this next phase. Give us a call, everybody. Let us know if you're restless out there or not. 549-2937. Sky LeBron. The mayor, you know, some weeks ago, along with Governor DeSantis, really took a lot of criticism for opening up the beaches, saying critics said that was too early and dangerous. The mayor has said, look, it's a diverse state. We don't have as many cases up here as they do in South Florida. Different locales need to manage this differently. What are you hearing from the city about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear now. For around a month, we've seen a drop in the overall percentage of positive cases. Now, despite the fact that more things have opened up. Now, there was that weekend that we did see a spike, but that the mayor brought up could have been because there was statewide testing being conducted by the National Guard, and they were testing a lot of these assisted living facilities. But overall, the percentage has dropped, and Governor DeSantis has been a big proponent for Mayor Curry as well, going on, you know, kind of different rants, talking about how they owe Jacksonville an apology, and they owe Mayor Curry an apology for trying to open things up when a lot of people were saying not to.
Right. Dan Scanlon, amidst all of this, testing continues around the city at several different locations. They are now doing antibody testing at Lot J in downtown Jacksonville at TIAA Bank Field. This is first off, though, for first responders and healthcare workers. Jacksonville is testing slightly above average compared to lots of other cities around the country, but overall, we're still only testing between 1 and 2% of the population for either the virus or for antibodies to the virus. And we don't have widespread contact tracing either. Those widespread testing, widespread contact tracing, every public health expert says is critical to getting us all back to something resembling normal. What are your thoughts about how Florida is dealing with this aspect of the virus?
Well, I will tell you, in the times that I've been out covering things for the Times Union in the past week, a funeral that I went to this week, shopping at Publix, I would dare say maybe 15 to 30% of the people I see are wearing masks. Other people are not. I'm seeing a lot of crowded places. I passed an outdoor bar the other day, I won't say where, and their porch was shoulder to shoulder with people. Contact tracing, the contact is right there. I mean, the person next to you could have had it for 10 days, had not been showing any real symptoms, and you are in that risk factor, and now you've got it. And if you don't get tested, you don't know. So I think 1% to 2% does not help us at all. The mayor did state yesterday, wear your mask, and I think that's the bottom line. As Dr. Fauci said as well, wear your mask when you go out. I don't care if you're going back to a restaurant, if the governor or the mayor allow it. Their advice is wear a mask and probably restrict your outdoor activities with people until we get a better handle on this.
Yeah, Nikisha, mask wearing is effective at least somewhat slowing the transmission of the virus. We've seen Mayor Curry wear a mask and encourage other people to do that, modeling that for people in this area. The governor has donned a mask. President Trump, of course, has taken a lot of criticism for refusing to wear a mask. And the mask wearing has become a flashpoint in the culture wars in a weird sense. What do you think about that?
I think it's a flashpoint because if you've seen the infographics that have been floating around and you realize what the transmission rate is when someone is wearing a mask versus when someone is not, that it's reckless to go outside and to be in public in a restaurant, in a bar, or even on the beach and not have a mask on. And understand that everybody has been inside for weeks and they feel like they don't have the virus, or that, you know, they're healthy, they're not going to get sick, or they've had it already, whatever the case may be. But the fact of the matter is this is a communicable disease. It is in the air. So it can linger there for who knows how long. You'd rather be safe and to be cautious, to be uncomfortable, to have your face get a little hot, your glasses may fog up if you're wearing glasses with a mask on while you're walking around. But you'd rather do all that than to die. I think it's pretty common sense. Do you want to live or do you want to die? We don't know when the end of this crisis is going to be, when herd immunity will kick in, when anybody will get a vaccine. Put the mask on to go about your daily life. It's just that simple.
And let's go to some calls now. As the mayor and the governor prepare to announce the next phase of reopening the city and the state, where are you with all of this? Do you feel comfortable going back into restaurants, stores, salons, maybe the gym when they open back up or not? Let us know how you're doing out there as we talk about this all on our Friday Media Roundtable. It's 549-2937. Cheryl is in Arlington. Hi, Cheryl. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call, Melissa.
Sure.
I have to say, when we go out, we wear masks. We will not go out without them around other people. Might not wear it in my car, but I'm the only one in it. The only time my daughter lets me out, I live with my daughter's grandkids.
Okay, and yeah, we're having trouble hearing you. There you are. Go ahead.
Okay, it's the only way my daughter lets me go out of the house is for doctor's appointments. And then I go straight there and straight back. It's because my daughter was born with a heart condition. She's a lifelong heart patient. My grandson was born early and has leftover respiratory problems. I will be 65 next month. And nobody wants to lose anybody. And so we've been stuck in our house since the end of January, and we're just content to do that. The only thing we do is we try to get at least once a week, we order from a restaurant to try to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's delivered. And one more final comment, if I may, not to do with the virus, except indirectly because of our poor national response to it. Elections coming up never should be a popularity contest. They are job interviews because we are hiring these people we elect to work for us in whatever job they're running for. And so they need to give us their education, their finances, their history, everything about, just like you would regular job interview.
Okay, Cheryl, I hear you. And I appreciate you sharing your family situation. That's Cheryl in Arlington. Dan Scanlon, you know, for folks out there that are elderly or immunocompromised in any way, this is still a very, very scary time.
Well, you know, I think the governor's statement yesterday that this is a virus you don't get if you're in good shape is going counter to the medical advice that we've been hearing. We've been hearing children, even babies, are getting these viruses now and some strange skin rash that comes along. So I think everyone needs to be very concerned at the possibility of getting it and be concerned for months to come until there is a vaccine or a good treatment approved by FDA.
Yeah. Sky LeBron, the majority of people who are passing away in this state are elderly. And that we do need to be clear about that. But as Dan points out, not always.
Yeah, and we've seen kids in Duval County and Northeast Florida have contracted this. We haven't seen a high number of deaths or severe illnesses, but they are still getting it. They could still transmit it. They can still receive the virus as easily as anybody else. And now we're seeing, as we get into the summer months, there are going to be, you know, summer camps that are going to open up, and they have to take extreme, strict precautions to make sure that they're going to be as safe as possible and limiting the number of kids that they're going to have in any one group.
Yeah, summer camp is another wrinkle in all of this. Give us a call if you're a parent out there wanting to discuss that. It's 549-2937. Vicki in St. Augustine. Hey, Vicki, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I listen to your show every morning. I just want to say that.
Thank you so much.
Yes. You know, I've been...
Oh, we lost Vicki. But apparently she wanted to say that she hopes people will stay put for as long as it takes. So Vicki, if you want, give us a call back. We've got another St. Augustine caller. It's Lori down in St. Aug. Hey, Lori, happy Friday to you.
Hi, how are you? Mm-hmm. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I work at a local grocery chain here in St. Augustine, and I would say there's probably 20 to 25% of the people that wear masks, and I've worked in retail most of my life, and what I notice is Democrats wear them, Republicans don't.
Well, how do you know that, you know, though? How do you know whose party affiliation is what?
A lot of times they have their garb on, you know, their political whatever. And you can, you know, you can just tell. And you can just kind of tell by the way they talk, and just how they act. And, you know, I'll ask people. I'll engage people in conversation and talk about, you know, politics, and that's what I get. The Republicans seem to think it's a hoax, and we're all paranoid and freaking out over nothing, and Democrats are very, be safe. I just want to say to people, when you go out in public, please wear a mask. Please keep your social distance. You know, I've been working this whole time, and...
Where do you work, Lori?
I work at a large grocery chain. I mean, there's only two, so it's not that difficult.
Okay. And you're allowed to wear a mask at work, right? You're supposed to.
We're required.
You're required to now.
To wear a mask. Yes.
Now, can you tell me your party affiliation? Are you comfortable sharing that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a Democrat.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that call, and be safe, Lori. Nikisha, a recent cell phone tracking analysis showed, and it was published in the Washington Post, people who hail from Republican-leaning counties are moving around more than people in bluer areas. So there is at least some data to support what that caller is saying. Just like everything else in this country, the response to this virus is partisan, and it's divisive, unfortunately.
I don't think it's surprising that there's more movement in Republican areas. I think if you look at the electoral map, bluer areas and Democratic areas are areas that are more heavily populated for the most part, and they're in very dense urban cities. When you think about the Northeast, some cities in the Midwest, and cities on the West Coast. And then when you think about Republican areas, they're more rural, they're more spread out for the most part. Not all. And so I think that lends a bit of insight into how you see people move around, because when you're in a rural area or a rural county and you have acres of land and there's no one next to you for miles, you are going to move around more simply because you have to get to essential services like grocery stores and hospitals, but also because you don't think that the virus is going to affect you when you have all this land around you and you don't see anyone for acres or for miles. So I can completely understand that. But I also think that it's extremely silly to think that just by nature of spatial distance that that's going to somehow give you an immunity from this virus. Because I think what we're seeing in states like Texas is that even though they are rural areas, people are still getting sick because you don't know who they're coming into contact with. And when they are getting sick, they're having to go to hospitals who are stressed, who are taxed, who don't have the essential services. And that puts them at even more risk. So I think while you're seeing that movement, you also have to weigh the pros and the cons and the risk factors that come with it. Yes, you might be in a rural area and that may make your initial contact with the virus lower, but that does not mean that you're immune or that you can't get it or that it won't reach you. It is a global pandemic. It's in the air. Stay home, wash your hands, wear a mask.
All great points. Dan Scanlon, you know, when you compare the data between let's just say right here in our area, Duval versus St. John's County, much more stay at home, according to the cell phone data, in Duval than in St. John's. As Nikisha points out, it's not as urban an area, not as dense. So that's playing a role. But what she's also saying, I think, is so important. This is so terrifying for people because you can catch it despite doing everything right. You can socially distance. You can wear a mask. You can stay home. You can still get the virus. I think that's the uncertainty of this is what is so hard for people.
I think it's a game of dice here. You take a roll, and if you get come up with bad numbers, if you just happen to meet that one person who has it and doesn't know, if you're not wearing a mask, your chances of getting it go up. I don't know why Jacksonville has less than St. John's, which is obviously more spread out. We have job centers here. We have lots of retail here. We have much more industry here than St. John's County does. So the chances of contact here should be higher. Maybe more people.
Right, but what I was saying was people stay home more, are staying home more in Duval, moving around less. Yeah.
Either people are doing, either they're doing better job here of wearing masks or they are staying home. I know most of my neighbors are home now. They're working only a little bit from the office, doing the rest at home. I'm certainly here in this corner office in my bedroom working. I don't go out too much, and when I do, the mask is on.
Here's an email from a listener. If we're going to wait till we have zero deaths, we'll never open up anything. The fact is, if you're young, under 65, and in good health, your chances of dying of this are very small. Another view, here's a tweet from a listener. How much do we really know about this novel coronavirus? We should err on the side of caution. All right, let's go. We do have Vicki back on the line from St. Augustine. Vicki, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking me back. So I live in the south end of St. Augustine, in Crescent Beach, a little part of the beach town, and I've been trying to figure out for months what's going on through people's heads. I don't think it's a big deal to stay home. I haven't worked since the beginning of March. I have a young family. We've been hanging out.
What's your job, Vicki?
I work in a restaurant.
Okay. How are you doing financially?
I'm doing okay, because we got the stimulus check, and because my husband has been able to work from home, and so we're doing okay, and savings. We're lucky, young people that have some savings, but we have not had a problem staying put. We have not gone into grocery stores. We've been getting things delivered, have not gone into restaurants. Restaurants are reopened. I opted to not go back to work. I can't understand the mentality of people thinking this is like the flu. I just don't understand it. Downtown St. Augustine, it's like nothing ever happened. Couple weeks ago, when things reopened, everybody started pouring back into the historic district. No parking. I just don't understand. We're such a selfish society. We have everything at home that we need to be comfortable: air conditioning, heating, TV, Netflix, Hulu, internet, everything we need to be comfortable. Just stay in your home, please. It's not fair to those people who are taking this seriously to have to put up with people's selfishness right now. This is around the world. It's not just St. Augustine. Open your eyes. See what's going on in Italy, in Spain, all over the world. And we're just a tiny little pocket. Please just stay home.
All right, Vicki, thank you for that. Sky, are people being selfish?
I think it's a mixed bag, because you do have to consider people that are very desperate right now to get back to work. There are people that the caller listed off a number of amenities that are available, but some people are losing, you know, the AC and losing their light and losing things and could be losing things, especially when moratoriums are lifted. So there is that economic factor to it. But also what you brought up before and what was talked about before is some people aren't taking this as seriously. And we have seen, I mean, there is a video that was passed around yesterday. A reporter in Long Island went to a protest, and it was a pro-Trump protest.
I saw that.
Yeah, and it had, you know, a lot of people were not abiding by the guidelines and were actually coming up to the reporter and saying, you know, I'm going to stand close to you. I'm not going to let you file your report, because this isn't as big of a deal as it's been made out to be on the national scale.
We do need to point out, as the caller said, that staying home, if you can be comfortable, is the best way to limit transmission of this virus. The economic piece of this is important to talk about, too. Unemployment claims continue to skyrocket around Florida. Several local businesses are laying off or even buying out their staff. That includes TIAA. The bank is offering buyouts to 75% of its workforce, including the Jacksonville employees. Here's an email from Tina. With the lifting of work-from-home orders, parents will be expected to return to work, but options for childcare are limited. Summer camps have been canceled in St. Johns County. Most facilities are already full. This is a huge problem for working-class and low-income families. We need to stop sending people to work until we expand childcare. Nikisha, what about that?
Ooh, that's a whole other conversation, because I don't think what people realize is that a lot of the workers who are in essential services that are not doctors and nurses, but who drive the buses or drive transit services, who work in the grocery stores or the pharmacies, who drive trucks and do some of that work. They are black and brown people of color who are, by nature of underlying health conditions, are more at risk and more susceptible to coronavirus and then dying from COVID-19. And then you imagine that they also have families that they have to support. They can't afford to miss paychecks, and they can't afford to be stuck at home with children doing homeschool and doing that work that a lot of us have had to sacrifice for. And then you realize that our schools are not adequately equipped to handle the influx of students into the classrooms, daycare centers, childcare centers, schools, summer camps. They're not equipped to handle that. Parents have been keeping their kids home because they're scared, rightfully so. And so it's just an entire breakdown in the system of our country, educationally, racially, financially, and our healthcare system. And I just think that we really need to look and examine what people do, how they're getting by, how they're coming together, how they're making ends meet, and how that can all come apart in just 2 months for one of the richest countries in the world.
If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Nikisha Williams, Sky LeBron, Dan Scanlon, and yours truly, and your calls as we talk about the next phase of reopening Jacksonville and Florida. Where are you with all of this? It's 549-2937. Jane in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Jane. Happy Friday.
Good morning. Happy Friday, Melissa. A couple things. I was at the Fresh Market down in Ponte Vedra Beach, and they have a nice sign that says, please wear a mask, protect yourself and others. And I had my mask on, and as I approached, a woman walked up to the door, saw the sign, turned around, went back to her car, and drove off. And I think people are going to make that decision. It's every man for himself. We have to stop looking to the national, federal government to help us. And we have to now learn how to live with COVID-19 with people who are human. And obviously, some want to take care of each other, and some just want to take care of themselves.
Jane, thanks. Dan Scanlon, you know, a vaccine could be years away. And the federal response has been inadequate, although I think the state response has gotten higher marks and the local response. They've done the best they can with the resources they have. But yeah, I mean, a vaccine is years away. And so this has sparked a renewed sense of community, looking out for your neighbor, doing the best you can on your own with your own household. What do you think about her comments?
Well, you know, the one thing that I've been doing of late is if I go to do takeout food, it's only with a locally owned restaurant. I want to, you know, help my neighbors who are out there trying to keep ends meet, and knowing full well that even 25 or 50% occupancy is not going to pay for their rent and everything else. So, yeah, I'm seeing the neighborly aspect to it. What really scares me is something that I just wrote about this week that we're going to have statewide in our newspapers. Is the fact that the car dealerships are desperately hoping that as things loosen up, people are showing up or will be showing up. But here's the other news that happened this week. With the rental car companies going under, Hertz apparently filing for bankruptcy. If you want a car, there's going to be a lot of rental cars out there, used cars. So the new car market may take a hit from that. Another ripple effect of the coronavirus.
Yeah. If you're in the market for an affordable used car right now, you couldn't pick a better time. Meanwhile, we have a lot of comments on our Facebook page. Robert writes, I'm looking forward to returning to my daily gym, but how do we prevent the spread of virus on exercise machines? You know what? We'll get some more guidance on that hopefully today, Sky, when the governor gives an update here in Jacksonville, because that could be the next tranche of businesses to reopen gyms, right?
Yeah, and that is a huge concern. You know, we've learned that this comes from droplets and it can stay on surfaces. So how are gyms going to be able to properly disinfect? I mean, I feel like it for a large part of it is going to be the users of these gyms have to be responsible to make sure that they are disinfecting every single time they finish using a piece of equipment, meaning that, you know, you can't just have that guy or girl go and use equipment and then walk away. It has to be mandatory now, and people have to be responsible for one another, that you got to properly clean stuff when you use it, which is something I think has been a little bit more rare.
Yeah. I mean, Nikisha, when you go to a gym, people typically try to wipe down a machine after they use it, but this is a whole other, this is a much higher order magnitude of cleaning that they're going to have to do.
Yeah, I'm wary about going back into a gym or a fitness place or a yoga studio just because people are going to be there, they're going to be sweating, and then just the level, everyone's level of cleanliness is not equal. So I think gyms will take all the precautions that they can by wiping things down and keeping things clean, but there's going to be some type of social distance that has to be maintained, which means removing some equipment, maybe minimizing the number of people who can go in at a certain time, shortening hours so that they can do deep cleans and maybe in the morning, the afternoon, the evening, just because you don't want 200, 300 people in one place sweating it out, or 30 people in a group workout class sweating it out, and then 2 weeks later, all those people are sick.
Right. Let's take one more call, and then we'll move on to some other news of the week. Lots of calls from St. Augustine today. St. Augie, we see you down there, and we are so glad that we have so many loyal listeners in the nation's oldest city. John is in St. Augustine. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up, I have three kids, and one has special needs. He has autism. And it's a difficult time for us because we're completely out of routine. And he's developed some self-injurious behaviors where he's headbanging and things.
Oh, and, I'm so sorry.
The only way to The only way to calm him down really is to drive around. And I have to bring him to the store. He won't wear a mask. I wear a mask. Sometimes I don't with him because I've had comments where I'm wearing one and he's not. And it's been very difficult on our family. And I'm not bringing it up to shame anyone or because we just feel guilty about it. But we have no answers.
Right. You're just doing the best you can. And I'm so sorry that it's so difficult for your family, John. I think it's important to be mindful of this, that families have all kinds of challenges in this crisis. And that's a difficult one. So thinking of you and hoping that things ease up a little bit for your household soon, John. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to discuss another big headline from the week right now. As heads continue to roll in this shakeup at JEA, interim CEO Paul McElroy this week placed Chief Administrative Officer Herschel Vineyard on an administrative leave. And he also rehired three former utility officials as his special assistants. These were people that were forced out during the reign of Aaron Zahn, who's now a disgraced former CEO of the company. A federal grand jury subpoena has demanded communications from JEA's senior leadership team, and it mentions Vineyard by name. Federal investigators want all emails, handwritten notes, and electronic communications linked to the utility's failed attempt to sell itself off to a private company. Dan Scanlon, Herschel Vineyard has figured prominently in this privatization scheme. And Paul McElroy, the interim CEO, is wasting no time, it seems, making big changes at the utility.
Well, you know, the thing I remember about Mr. McElroy and one of the people he hired back, their former PIO, Jerry Boyce, was that they were always willing to talk to the news media, unlike the last round of JEA. So that heartens me that there'll be some more communication and neighborly attempts. But yeah, there was obviously the Times Union has been all over this for the past few months, and it's been intriguing to note that the latest column that we wrote does indicate that that some of the emails and information there certainly shows some strange things being discussed by Mr. Vineyard and others. And now we're getting into the federal, we're learning more what the feds are doing. So this is serious investigation. This is not just playing around.
Yeah, Nikisha Williams, I think the huge question everyone who's following this has is, will there be indictments coming out of this federal grand jury? And of course, the feds' actions are typically quite opaque. If they don't indict anyone, we'll never really learn much more about their investigation. One clue we did get in recent weeks is that they are demanding all encrypted communications between the mayor's office at City Hall and the brain trust, such as it was at JEA. Encrypted messaging apps like Confide or Signal are popular because you can communicate without any kind of paper trail. Allegedly, they're secure communications. But as we now know, they are recoverable. and the feds will be able to read these encrypted messages and see whatever they were saying.
I think that once the federal government announced that it was looking into this mess that has happened with JEA, that I think only time will tell whether or not someone will be indicted. But the fact that they have been peeling back so many layers of what's been happening that was both known and unknown, and that they are now looking for these encrypted messages, all handwritten notes, all communications, to find out really where this started, how it was initiated, how it was brought to the public, how it was just put out there in the beginning, which has always been the issue, was how it was played out, because there was such secrecy around it and such, oh no, I didn't suggest that type of language from City Hall, that if there's something to be found out, the federal government is going to find it. And for those involved, I'm sure they can only hope that there are no indictments handed down. But I think by the scope of the federal government investigation, those are probably inevitable.
You know, Skylar Braun. Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
As Nate Monroe wrote in the Times Union this week in his column, Zahn himself in a 2018 note said that that encrypted phone app works great, which obviously Nate says could take on larger relevance as the federal prosecutors are getting into that subpoena and further investigation. So works great. Sounds like there must have been a lot more that they're going to unencrypt.
Yeah. I don't think it would surprise people observing this process, Sky, if Aaron Zahn was himself indicted in this process. The bigger question is, would anyone else be indicted, particularly anyone close to the mayor's office? That's the big unknown.
Yeah. And you know, got to give some credit to the special investigatory committee that has been looking into this, as well as I do want to say also the JEA board has the new JEA board kind of just launched this thing with getting rid of Melissa Dykes, putting in Paul McElroy, who then, you know, just came in here and started making quick moves. I think it's pretty unclear whether we're going to see some indictments in the next couple months. I mean, or anything in the next couple months, but things have been moving very quickly, I think we can say.
Right. And, you know, Nikisha, we don't know what was in the minds of anyone that was using these encrypted messaging apps. We don't know who was using them. One could theorize that maybe they were being used to avoid public records requests, that local media would have been peppering JEA and City Hall with as they tried to cover this scandal. They would not have shown up in a public records request. That said, what anyone who wants to use one of these apps and thinks that your communications can never be recovered needs to disabuse themselves of that notion right away, because you can recover those encrypted communications.
I think we learned a long time ago when the feds first cracked open an iPhone without Apple's help that they will get at anything they want to. And so the sense of privacy and security is really false no matter what you're trying to communicate on, what you're trying to do, or what you're trying to hide. If someone wants to access it and it's a computer code, it can be broken into and it can be found. I think the fact that these messaging apps and these secure systems were used for communication, it doesn't necessarily have to be something improprietary, but it does give an air of secrecy and just makes you wonder, well, if you couldn't make it public because you didn't want to run the risk of public scrutiny, a public request or a FOIA request, then why? It can go either way. It could be something innocuous. It could be something very serious and very scandalous. And I just think that when you do something in the dark, it will come to light, and that's what we're seeing now.
You know, Dan, Florida has a very broad sunshine law. Public officials have to meet a very high bar in their communications with each other. They don't like it. You know, they can't have an off-the-record chat about government business. Everything has to be noticed. Everything has to be public. That said, Jacksonville, leaving aside the JEA scandal, Jacksonville is not well known for its adherence to sunshine laws on a number of different matters. This is not a new thing for us, is it?
Correct. The police reports that the news media and I request routinely appear heavily redacted. They cite Marcy's Law, which does rightfully give privacy to victims and suspects in some cases. but it seems to me that a broader brush is used on those police reports. And now even the Florida Highway Patrol has introduced a heavier hand with Marcy's Law. And there are ways to investigate and legitimately get that info, but the initial reports that we get or news releases are heavily redacted, yes.
And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories of the week with Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times-Union, Sky LeBron of WJCT, freelance writer Nikisha Williams, and yours truly. And we want to make note of another big story from the week, although it doesn't feel like it yet. But if you want to weigh in about hurricane season, give us a call at 549-2937. It's not even June yet, but hurricane season is off to a kind of soft opening already. Forecasters are pointing to a possible named tropical system off the southeast coast this weekend. This would be the sixth consecutive year with a storm forming before June 1st, which is the official start of hurricane season. This storm, it's going to be a tropical or subtropical storm, and it's been named Arthur. It's expected to form near the Bahamas this weekend, but we are really only expected to see a glancing blow of rain to the coast and maybe some high surf. This is stemming from a broad area of low pressure that's developed between Cuba and the Florida Keys. Friday morning, Miami and Fort Lauderdale this morning, they're getting some heavy rain right now, so keep your eyes this weekend on Tropical Storm Arthur. All of that said, Sky LeBron, you know, hurricane season has crept into May pretty much over the last few years, which climatologists will tell you is in part due to our warming oceans and our warming planet.
Yeah, I might have to consider moving that date back a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's come upon us so quickly because there's been so much else going on, of course, with COVID-19 and everything else. I think something that is going to be interesting having to do with hurricane season as well is that tax-free season where there's going to be a lot of people trying to go to the store, trying to stock up for the hurricane season. But then at the same time, you got to abide by social distancing. You got to abide by these capacity limitations. So how's that all going to work out as we go into the end of May and early June?
Yeah. I mean, how we deal with hurricane season amidst this pandemic, Dan, is a big concern for state officials, FEMA, everybody involved in public safety and public health.
It could just ramp up the transmission of COVID-19 if lots of people are stuck together. There's even been some discussion as to how to have a hurricane shelter when you have, obviously, people shoulder to shoulder. And let's not forget, we've also had two major wildfires, one in the Panama City area and one in South Florida. We've even had some JFRD folks go to fight that. So until the rains come, we could have some wildfires to mess up our environment.
Great.
Yeah.
We'll leave everyone on that happy note. But Nikisha, as if we haven't dealt with enough in the last couple of months, we could have a very active summer and fall hurricane season. Let's hope not, though.
Yeah, that's the biggest hope. I think when COVID-19 first started to really hit the United States in March, all my friends in the South and the media in the Southeast and news and everything like that were like, oh my gosh, hurricane season just needs to come in and not and be a mild one. But because of the warmth of our planet,
we might not see that end up. I want to jump in and thank you all. Dan Scanlon, Nikisha Williams, and Sky LeBron. Guys, have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
You too.
You're welcome.
You.
Up next, Broadway returns to Jacksonville and how one local photographer is helping her community during this pandemic. We'll be right back.
Cavendish Partners PA and Michael Cavendish, a law practice supporting Jacksonville's business community, downtown, by appointment, and on the web at cavpartners.com.
Congaree and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congaryandpen.com for more information.
ViStar Credit Union is proud to be a production underwriter of First Coast Connect's Friday Roundtable. ViStar, we never forget it's your money. On the web at vistarcu.org.
Fake news, science skeptics, these were all ideas that Galileo battled during the Renaissance. I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we talk to astrophysicist and author Mario Livio about modern science facing the same pushback.
Unfortunately, we are facing blatant science denial today.
Same issues, new era. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on 89.9 WJCT.
The president says the number of Americans being infected is coming down rapidly. And he made this claim about how we test for the coronavirus.
We have met the moment and we have prevailed.
Neither are close to being true. What facts can we take away from the past week? I'm Celeste Headlee. It's the Friday News Roundup. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT. Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, FSCJ's Artist Series just announced its new season of shows. Broadway in Jacksonville does resume in February of next year, and they've got a slate of exciting productions. And that includes a chance for all of you who missed seeing Hamilton because it was canceled in the pandemic to finally catch it on stage, too. Here's Artist Series spokeswoman Marisa Garrett.
We have Cats, Come From Away, Fiddler on the Roof, and headlining our season is Dear Evan Hansen. Oh, they're definitely excited. We've heard a lot of positive feedback from our new season, and everyone's just really excited to kind of get together and experience the shows.
All right, get your tickets now for Cats, Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, Fiddler on the Roof, or a few other shows. Go to fscjartistseries.org. Well, photographer Renee Parenteau is keeping busy in this pandemic. She's been taking front porch photos of families, socially distanced, of course, and she's also been doing her part to help small business owners, and she's on the line. Hey, Renee.
Hey, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. You know, you're like so many business owners. This pandemic has limited the amount of business you can do because you have to socially distance. But being the creative person that you are, you've found lots of things to keep you busy. What have you been up to?
Well, when the whole pandemic started, my studio sessions started postponing and everything was clearing out. You know, I panicked a little. And I also noticed that the restaurants were closing. And I've been here about 12, 13 years, and I came here at the beginning of the economic crisis. So it took us until about 3 years ago to get a vibrant commercial business here in Springfield. So not only did I start doing photos for families called the Front Steps Project that my friend Scott Shelbrock from the chamber told me about, she encouraged doing family sessions, social distancing from the sidewalk. I started doing that in Springfield, and just in exchange for them purchasing a gift card or takeout food from the restaurant in the area. And at the same time, I'd photograph the chefs or the owners of the restaurants and talk about what their hours were, what they were offering, because it was so important to me to keep these businesses going. And the families as well enjoyed the photos of in their pandemic or their quarantine state, and also we're supporting the restaurant. So it worked all the way around, keep people excited, happy, and keep our business going.
Now, on your website, which is at ReneeParenteauPhoto.com, people can check out the Front Steps Project, and I'm looking at these images right now, just gorgeous images of families on their front porch. And you're just kind of 6 feet away taking the picture. These are amazing. And this would be a great gift to give a family, too.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. I'm doing it probably through the end of May and mostly in Springfield because it's easier just to get around and try to you know, stay closer to home. But yeah, I do it from the sidewalk, and they're just in on their porch and from a safe distance. It takes about 5 minutes, and we get great shots, and, you know, it's just been so much fun to do.
Now, once we head into June, July, are you going to ease back into doing traditional services?
Yeah, I'm starting gradually. In fact, I had ServPro come in yesterday and do a phase one preventative COVID treatment, sanitizing treatment to my studio, which smells like a hospital now. It's so clean. And so gradually, as people feel comfortable with social distancing and precautions, they can start coming back in. And I also do a lot of outdoor sessions, so that's totally safe, lots of social distancing. And so I'm ready to take appointments anytime people are ready.
Now, you're a small business, and this has been hard on all small businesses, but you've really tried to kind of band together with other business owners in this crisis. What's that been like?
Oh, it's been fantastic. As I put out effort to support other businesses, they're coming back to me, supporting me. I've been offering gift cards for my studio, offering like my headshot sessions and celebrity portrait sessions, including makeup in the future, at a discounted rate if they purchase the gift card now before the end of May. And I've gotten great support. And, for example, being on your show, you're fantastic in supporting me. And I see it all over Jacksonville. It's like a great, it's always been a great networking and support system. And it's even so important and fantastic right now.
And full disclosure, Renee is my friend, my neighbor, and she has taken several headshots of me through the years, and she's just so talented. So check out ReneePerentoPhoto.com and the Front Steps Project. She'll be doing those family photos from your front porch, socially distanced, through the end of May. And then after that, we'll enter a new phase. So I look forward to seeing you soon, my friend. And thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is the very socially distanced Heather Schatz. She's in Ponte Vedra and producing from there. Josh Torres, though, is here in studio with me, our show director. Jessica Palumbo is also working from home, running the newsroom brilliantly. Bill Bortsfield is dialing up all digital from his undisclosed location as well. And wherever you are, give us a call and email us here on the show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Make sure to tune in today at noon as well for the Florida Roundup. We'll take a look at the reopening of the state from all across Florida. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.